This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor.fm to get started.
We've got the Crown Princess on the line, and we are so excited to talk to her. Stay tuned as we speak with her and discuss Man in the High Castle, Season 4, Episode 7.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, with the buzz.
Hey, everybody. I'm Rachel Goodman, and I'm here with Belle.
Belle Blankenship. Yeah. So happy to join you guys today.
And we are stoked because we have Mayumi Yoshida on the line. Hey, Mayumi. Thank you for being here. For everyone who is not familiar, she plays the Crown Princess on Man in the High Castle. An amazing part. But Mayumi has also done a ton of voice acting work. She's been in a ton of shorts. And recently, you were in Akashi as well, which won an award at the 40th Asian American International Film Festival. So thank you for being on the line. We're going to jump in, and we're going to just kind of talk about Episode 7 first. And then at the end, if you guys all stay tuned, we're going to have a Q&A with Mayumi.
All right. So, yes. And, of course, we would love for you to jump in and discuss the different topics we have today.
Absolutely.
Yeah, sounds good.
So, Episode 7, yes. The most, to me, which was fascinating, and I really felt this on a deep emotional level, was when Japan announced that they were leaving North America.
Yes. I feel like this, to me, was the episode where we are finally seeing the tables turn. And I feel like it's, you know, these past 3 and 4 seasons, we have just seen so much, you know, so many losses, and everyone's working so hard to, you know, win their causes. And finally, it's come to fruition. So yeah. It is very rewarding. And yeah, so Mayumi, a question I have for you is, you know, obviously for your character, the Crown Princess, her whole goal is really just trying to have a peaceful sort of like intervention when it comes to the show and trying to resolve things. So I guess after watching this episode, would you say, you know, was it kind of more hopeful, or does it almost seem like it's a little too good to be true?
I think it depends on which side you're on.
Fair enough. That's a good point.
Yes.
But for the princess, I think if starting from season 4, that was something that her and Tagomi and, of course, the royal family have been talking about. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, Tagomi died.
I know.
That's so sad.
But that this is something that was already discussed. And then Inokuchi kind of talks about it, too, a little bit. But I think I love that they sort of mirrored the actual history that we have with the emperor going on television. Well, in our world, the emperor didn't go on. It was on radio, but that was the first time anyone heard the god's descendant's voice in Japan. So it was a very emotional thing to shoot, for sure, because even in it was a very interesting episode, but definitely something that Crown Princess have been wanting to do for the greater good.
Yes. And I think like one great line that your character says is, "Can we hold this territory?" And I think that, to me, in that scene, just really kind of shows that, you know, it is kind of that greater good for the crown princess. It's more, you know, obviously you want the, you know, Japanese want to control this side, but is it even worth it anymore? So, yeah, I think I love that.
I think in the episode 6, which you guys have probably already covered.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a scene between Kido and crown princess. And for the first time, princess kind of touches a private moment for a private matter for Kido, which is his son going to Manchuria.
Mm. Yeah.
And,
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I think she's also showing her human side to Kido, which is like a ginormous amount of trust. So that question mm-hmm. was only really allowed to be questioned to Kido because now that Tagomi's gone, mm-hmm. someone in San Francisco, Kido's the only one who she really trusts. So
yeah,
oh, that's great.
It's interesting because I got the sense too when we saw that moment between Kido and the Crown Princess that ultimately, she was going to be the voice of reason and be the voice that went back to Japan, and that whatever Kido said would be, you know, she would make her decision based around that. I found it fascinating that essentially what they were getting at is that the Crown Princess was the voice behind Japan
mm-hmm.
and the power that she had.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's not just her. She became the messenger. Pretty much through Tagomi, I think, because the royal family in Japan is going through like their own ginormous issue. So, and I think now because of Tagomi's death, she felt that responsibility and this mission that she must stay and oversee everything. And I don't think Tagomi told her about the alternate universes films and what they did in season 3 and 2 using mm-hmm. that material. But I think she's learned from Tagomi that Kido has played a big part in not going into a bigger war in season 3 and season 2. So I think there's that level of trust there with Kido as well that Kido's not even aware, I think.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I feel like there's just watching her and watching Tagomi, I feel like even before Tagomi knew, mm-hmm. he still, like, there was this spiritual nature that I feel in both of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to hear your take on this, too. But it felt to me that even though the Crown Princess might not know about the alternate, you know, realities, that a part mm-hmm. of her still knew on some level that something wasn't right yeah. in the reality that they were in.
I think, again, going back to the thinking about the greater good, I think it's kind of in our spirituality, in our Japanese culture, that nothing is just about the time that we're living.
That makes
There's
sense.
Something about carrying on from the past, and then also what is something we're leaving behind in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that sort of spirituality is sort of just living within us, and especially being part of the royal family, because I think my character wasn't born in to the family.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she was well educated mm-hmm. in that way to sort of like,
yeah,
that's the way mm-hmm. of thinking.
Yeah.
That's a great perspective.
Yeah. Thank you. Like, that's really interesting to hear more about the Japanese perspective mm-hmm. and what it's like. My thought too is I'm wondering, how do you think that the Crown Princess felt delivering that message to the Emperor? Do you think that she felt like that was the right thing to actually leave?
It's a very hard decision on so many levels, but that's a tough question. I mean, it's mm-hmm. a tough question because I think it was tough for her
yeah.
as mm-hmm. well. I think it was, I really wish there was a scene for that.
Yeah, me too.
That's a good point.
Japan, and then, you know, what is she going to think when she opens the door to, mm-hmm. or like someone else is going to open the door, I'm sure.
But,
when she's standing in front of the door where the emperor is sitting, like, I think, what is she going to say and what will he think? And it's a lot of things that I'm sure anyone who's going through, like, a very awkward confrontation moment. But, like, stakes really high.
Right.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, so then what think, would... Yo, go ahead,
Oh, I was going to say that I think it comes down to sustaining the life that is left in Japan and the Japanese citizens in San Francisco. Because the citizens are what makes Japan.
Yeah.
So I think considering all that and then seeing how many people are dying and the bombing actually happening in her building in San Francisco, I think it was a natural choice that it's a wiser choice to retreat. Well, not retreat, but let go of that land and also give it back to the people. Because I think meeting children was a very key moment for her.
Yeah.
And realizing that there are people who value our culture who are not Japanese. And I think that's in old world and here, I think that's a very moving experience. And I think that's something that the princess actually never felt in actual contact. So I think children's effect was huge, and probably on Tilden too. But
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, and it's interesting because I think it was actually this episode too, where they arrested Tilden, and he went in and he was speaking with Kido, and Kido's reaction to him to Tilden. I could see Kido had evolved as a character when we saw the bombings and the way that Kido said, "You need to get out of here now." Like, it just it really speaks to his arc. And how he's starting to recognize too that there that you know that human life, like the value of human life in general, regardless of identity.
Yes.
Yeah.
And one thing, just slightly also transitioning to another part of this episode, is when Helen actually goes. Does her little cooking show. I think one thing, which was a great moment, but it, I feel like it kind of speaks to the role that women play in this show. I think sometimes it's kind of their role is to really just making kind of a sacrifice for the greater good. So how do you feel, especially your character as a strong, powerful female, how do you feel that kind of, what role do you feel like the women really play in this show?
I can't speak for the other three powerful women in who are like on top of the series. But I think the strength in Crown Princess is that people don't notice, people don't see what her effect was. I think that's where it's great. What's great about this character, like she not manipulate, but like she has these small meetings with people and then she very gently affects them and then try to steer them in a certain way. But nobody really knows about that. History won't even know. They won't. They probably even in the alternate universe world, I think people won't know how this was the woman who actually set up these meetings and sent these people and then delivered this news to the emperor. And I think there's, in a Japanese way, there's beauty in that, that it was like very subtly changed and she didn't take any credit for that. What's powerful on the other end, I think with Juliana and Belle, especially Belle and Helen, because they're more at the front and Juliana's more like in the back, kind of like trying to figure out these like loops and it's a huge storyline. And but Helen's like, she goes on television and does this. And and then also having, I think it's even women in multiple levels, even like Jennifer. Oh my gosh.
That's
isn't she amazing?
She is. And just her spunk and her spirit. And just how, and that's kind of, that's interesting. It's, I think what also fascinates me is that not just the strength of the females on the show, but we also see with John and Helen mm-hmm. how I keep wanting to see them together and see that they will have a strong marriage and work through this somehow. But it just isn't looking that way. And I think what breaks my heart is that this breakdown between them of no longer being honest with each other. Mm. And it's just, mm-hmm. yeah, it just, it's frustrating to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think kind of what you were saying, Mayumi, is that what I think I like about all the different female characters is they do kind of have just a different way of showing their strength. Like, I feel like Crown mm-hmm. Princess is really more of like a quiet strength that, but mm-hmm. it kind of speaks the loudest. I think there was that one moment where it was kind of at the beginning after Togomi had died and kind of, you know, everyone thought, like, you know, keep her out of politics. She doesn't need to be involved. And, like, you know, just she doesn't know anything. And then actually she knows everything that's going on. I think that's what I love about the Crown Princess's character. So for you, what things about her do you feel like you relate the most to? I know there's a lot. So. Or the least, whatever you feel.
I mean, she's such a grand figure mm-hmm. to still to our culture. Still, the royal family exists in our country, and mm-hmm. so taking on this role was definitely a ginormous responsibility. But I think the tenacity in her and how she doesn't back down, even though everybody expects different from her. Mm. Otherwise, like, I think that's something that I have something common with her. And when I first read the script for the audition, mm-hmm. It was the scene between my character and the Crown Princess and the Crown Prince in the car. And the Crown Prince was sort of talking about how, like, it's in the show, too, but how, like, you know, the Japanese is losing power and they have these giant rocket ships and technology. And then I sort of, like, pep talk him.
Yes.
But, and even in that small scene, I could just, my takeaway was, like, oh, she is badass.
Yes,
she is
I
not
agree.
Someone who's, like, oftentimes when Japanese women are portrayed in that time period, mm-hmm. it's kind of, you know, it fits in this meek, small, very conservative, and she obviously is very conservative and very mm-hmm. reserved, but there's this like inner strength that is ginormous. It's just and it moves people without mm-hmm. her even saying anything.
Yeah.
So that's something that I aspire to have.
Yeah. Yeah. We all do.
So
awesome.
In this episode, we also had Belle essentially taking charge, and it seems like she's going to be the leader of whatever happens now that we have the BCR in the mm-hmm. Northwest. So my next question to you is, What characteristics do you see in Belle that you think make a great leader, especially someone who has been like we've seen the other members of the BCR really pushing her down, and the other the other guys like basically trying to ignore her and have her go off and cook,
mm-hmm.
But yeah. She's stepped beyond that. So I just wanted to get your perspective on her.
I mean, can we just give a huge shout out to Frances Turner, because she's a phenomenal,
yes, fantastic.
Phenomenal
actress. She is. Oh, we will welcome that.
I don't know if you've seen her. I'm not IMDb. Her Instagram, but she mm-hmm. is. Oh my gosh, she's so beautiful.
So great. Oh yeah.
I think it's her vulnerability that separates her from other people, and I think how available she is with her emotion mm-hmm. and her motivation. I can't speak for her, but like what I see is that her motivation for the cause is very much attached to her dream and her emotion and her what she thrives for in life. So mm-hmm. it's like you don't let that go that easy.
That's
so
true.
I think that's where the strength comes from for her. Like, it's not just about what's right or wrong.
Yeah.
It's what she like truly wants. Mm-hmm. And she's not going to let go of that, because she suffered too long for what she wanted her entire life, or like what her people has wanted her entire decade or like, you know, centuries. So, and with a powerful woman wanting a family and like in that time, I think that's just anyone who it had like a small plot about like how she can't have children.
Yeah, right.
So there's like very small threads that show how she wants more, but it's been taken away from her. Mm-hmm. And it's something that maybe she can get.
Yeah.
If she just might get it. So mm-hmm. I think when it's that close, mm-hmm. you won't stop.
Yeah.
And if a woman, I think, is like when it's there, women in general, I think we just like bring this ginormous energy and charisma out. And that's when everybody's like, whoa,
yeah.
This woman did a job.
Yeah. And especially because no one else, like, she was the one who came up with the brilliant plan and it actually worked. And nobody else, with all that planning, with all the other people around, nobody else came up with that. So they better give her respect. Yeah. But
mm-hmm. I know. But a lot of times, I think just that time and also in general, like, sometimes if you were in that time of, or like if you're in that culture of women not in charge, they don't know how to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I love that they showed how like she just took it and then some people granted that to her and it was like, she should be doing this.
And I love how for the BCR, this is obviously a very like extraordinarily historical moment. Mm-hmm. And so we haven't seen the last episode yet, but presuming the BCR survives, this could be the most monumental thing where there is a female in charge, mm-hmm. and it could set the precedent for the future. And that's one of the things I love about the show is that you're as stuck as people are in this world. It's not permanent. Mm-hmm. It's such a beautiful message to, you know, just kind of bring out.
I think we were all inspired by Issa Hackett too. Issa Dick Hackett, who's our executive producer.
She is Philip. Go ahead.
Yes, she is Philip K. Dick's daughter.
Yeah.
She's always been, ever since season one, she's always had this ginormous energy, positive energy on set that always cared about all the actors and everybody and having her be in that position was, I think, a huge effect on possibly on the writers. I can't speak for them, but definitely for the cast, it felt like, you know, she had that whole thing with Amazon a couple years ago, too. And it like it shook us, but also really inspired us to be like, no, like, believe in your voice.
Yeah.
Fight for yourself. Stand up for yourself. And her being that person on set was definitely, and in my personal life too, she's just been such an inspiration.
And that's amazing. And it always makes me feel so wonderful that when I hear of a female being at, you know, at that level where they have creative control on some level. Especially in this world and the way that things have been going. I was going to, when we get to our Q&A, I was going to bring up the Golden Globes some people are arguing they recently stiffed female directors because, again, no female made it onto the nominations. But the reason I wanted to bring that up is because I watched one of your interviews where you had mentioned specifically entering a competition in a film festival that was meant that was female only. And I wanted to get your perspective on that. I think we're right at that time where we could transition into the Q&A portion. Yeah. So I'd love to hear your perspective on that.
Yeah.
That was actually my very first, I don't know if you're talking about Story Hive, maybe. I've always been an actor.
Yeah.
And then like 3 years ago, there was this film competition that came with grants and it was for female directors and they were looking for female directors. And then I applied, but I don't think I would have applied if it hadn't said female.
Oh, interesting.
Which is weird.
And is that because of the, like, why would you say that is exactly?
Because I've mostly been doing theater directing and then acting on TV and film. So I just felt like, oh, have I earned that name, that credit, that directing credit? I don't know. I don't have any training.
Mm-hmm.
But by them saying that we're looking for female directors, I felt like, oh, well, I have one step in.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah.
I felt like it's like a little bit safer for me to go in, which is so weird because now that I've done, directed and written short films and gone to like many festivals, it's so odd how much women or me or person of color in general, we feel like we need that permission to call ourselves that when we don't need to.
Yeah.
Like people who are not that will, you know, just call themselves that without any hesitation. Yet I had that hesitation for a little bit and I thought like, but not enough training, not enough blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
The big imposter syndrome came in.
Yes, I know it is. I feel like especially women, like we tend to really doubt ourselves and kind of like not really, you know, we have so much potential. But I think it does kind of come down to this. A lot of us kind of have that perfectionist thinking. Like I'll do it all the time. Like, well, if I don't, if I like kind of like what you were saying, if I don't have the training or like I'm missing something. Whereas I was reading a book that men tend to just go, or that's why there is kind of this wage gap, because men will always ask for more and women will always ask for less. Exactly. So since you do so many different things, I mean, you write, you direct, you act, is there one in particular that you enjoy the most, or are they just all very different and you like to keep all of them a part of your life?
It all goes down under storytelling for me. So it doesn't, actually there isn't that much of a separation.
Okay.
Mentally, but how much I spend time on and how I spend time on it is very different for each title. Like for writing, it's quite lonely.
Sure. Do I know that feeling?
Yeah, Rachel's a writer too.
Yeah. It's fun though. You know,
it's a very solo. Especially because it's I'm done my feature film and writing my feature film, and it's just such a long process, and it's all here and then writing it and then here and writing it. So that's a little I'm a people person, so that's that was hard. But acting is also at some point it's a very lonely job in a way, because at the end of the day it's you and the character. But I don't know, all of them, I think because directing and writing, I haven't clocked the hours enough yet as much as acting. Not that I've done. It's the beauty of all three is that it's forever changing and it's forever an educational process. But right now, I feel like I want to clock more hours as a writer and a director just to like...
Get the experience.
Absolutely. So that's actually a great segue. I was going to ask, what can we see next from you? Are you going to be focusing more on the writing and directing then? Or do you have a project we can expect in the near future?
I
just released a new film that I directed actually 2 years ago in Japan. We guerrilla shot this. It was crazy. Me and it's just three crew, and we went to Tokyo and Kyoto, Osaka in 8 days, and we shot in the countdown at Shibuya. Ooh. And it was insane.
Is this
we could have gotten in so much trouble.
That's amazing.
Hey, you made it.
It is so worth it. Wow. Is this Parabola? That film?
No, it's called Tokyo Lovers.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's on Vimeo.
Awesome. Okay. All right. Well, I definitely have to check that out too. Yeah.
And then I also had one other question. Read that on So We See You season one and then season four for a little bit. A Man in High Castle, and I had read that you were actually a Japanese dialect coach for season two and three. Is that correct?
Yes, and a little bit of four as well.
Okay, my question is kind of what was the big? My best friend actually does dialect coaching, and I'm wondering so it's a very niche thing to do, and I'm wondering kind of what was the biggest challenge or the hardest thing for a lot of the people you worked with to grasp when it came to kind of getting that dialect.
I think I love meeting people who, the best part of dialogue coaching is you get to know the actors really well, because oftentimes I talk to them about like what's their upbringing, as in like what kind of language background do they have, and I don't know if it was a challenge, but I guess if people had advantage if they had learned another language when they were young.
Yeah
That makes
because
sense.
Their ears are like so much more trained to hear other sounds.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And then they also notice the rhythm that they're speaking, or like the different placements of their tongue. Like I grew up in Washington, D.C. and Brussels when I was a child, and Japan as well.
Okay.
So I kind of was like in a place where I heard many different languages all the time. So that definitely helped me with my accent. And
got it.
I think... that is a hard part when it comes to dialect coaching, that like we just need to work on the fundamental.
Yes. So absolutely.
But, like, teaching the little vowels and all that, that's very easy. That's like the easiest part of like at this sentence, at this point, make sure you put your head down, that like, so you're showing them respect.
Interesting.
Those kind of things were involved in dialect coaching for Japanese, especially in this show. But, yeah, if you ever have kids, just expose them.
Yes, they're like sponges.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right.
So I think we have time for a couple more questions.
Sure.
My question is, what was your favorite moment on set of Man in the High Castle?
Oh my gosh.
And kind of like B to that question is, who was your favorite person or actor to work with?
Two loaded questions.
That's so hard. Actually, the San Francisco shoot for episode one, season four, was a blast, because there were so many people that came down to San Francisco. I'm in Vancouver, so I'm going down.
Gotcha. But,
to San Francisco, and just going to that beautiful Presidio itself was amazing. But all those background artists who were at the funeral were actually majority were Japanese.
Oh, wow.
And the people who we met there, some people came, like they drove from Seattle all the way because they wanted to be on the show, because they love it so much.
That is so sweet.
I know, it was so sweet. And then so many people, because I did the whole speech. It was actually quite a lot longer than what it aired, and it was like a 3-minute speech. And there were so many people who were Japanese there, so I could see it in their eyes. I'm like, they can hear it.
Wow.
I was like, oh, this is amazing. It feels like I'm actually doing this.
Yeah. Probably helped with the scene, too, I'm sure.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Wow. And then after that, once we finished, Tamlin, all these, Joel and all these people, all the cast, we went out for drinks.
Oh,
I think we were
so
up till like 4 a.m.
Get back out and shoot again.
The hotel lobby was closing, but we were still there.
Wow.
How can they say now?
It was so fun. And it was like, it was really nice to just, like, it was a great way to start season 4.
That is fantastic. Now, another thing I had read is that you took Royal Mannerism coaching. What exactly does that entail? Because I didn't even know that was a profession. So,
it is a profession.
Okay. I'd love to hear about it.
It entails stuff like, it's mainly stuff that I had to do on screen.
Okay.
So, like, how would she walk to the microphone?
Mm-hmm.
How would she take steps? Walk down, walk up? Where would the hand placements be?
Mm-hmm.
How does she go into a car? Very, very specific things. But it's little tiny things that we do that actually, if you don't do it, you can tell.
How? Yeah, now, it's just the subtleties. Okay.
Kind of just a really quick question off of that. Does production set that up, or do you as the actor have to decide, oh, I need to do that so that it's authentic? Or is...
For this time, production set this up.
Got it.
It's very lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Takes the pressure off.
That definitely does. Well, Mayumi, thank you so much for calling in tonight. It has been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you.
And
happy
with you. For all the fans watching, can you just tell us where we can find you on Twitter or Instagram? Mm-hmm.
Yes. I'm on Twitter and Instagram. It's the same handle. I am MYYOUME. It's like I'm my.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right, cool. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
I can't pronounce my name. It's like Mayumi.
Oh, got it. So just make it easy for people to find you.
Yeah. Awesome.
Well, yes, thank you. And we will definitely stay in touch. And we wish you the best on your projects.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a good
holiday, you too.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
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 And awesome. Belle, where can everybody find you?
Yes, so you can find me on Instagram. It is Bebenship, which is B as in boy, EBENSHIP.
And I'm Rachel Goodman. You can find me on Twitter, at Rach Goodman, or on my writing Instagram, which is at Rachel Radner Author. Okay, so that about wraps it up for Season 4, Episode 7.
Yay.
We'll be back in about an hour to talk about
Stay with us.
Episode 8. So see you very shortly.
Bye!
Bye, everybody!
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.